This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us for our Encore edition, featuring the best of our past few shows. Let the conversations begin. On Thursday nights, here in Chattanooga, you'll find Toby Hewitt performing at the Backstage Bar on Station Street. The singer-songwriter is a Chattanooga native, and last month, Toby dropped by Scenic Roots for a conversation full of stories and songs that we bring you for this hour. Toby, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
So tell me how you got into being a singer-songwriter.
Well, I think I just tripped one day and fell right into it. Music has been such a part of my life for as long as I can remember, but I do recall one of my most memorable and favorite Christmases ever was the Christmas when I was 12 years old, and I got this junky electric guitar, little amp combo thing for Christmas, and my dad got an acoustic guitar. We were going to learn to play guitar together, and it was super exciting, and I remember coming downstairs and seeing the setup in the living room there by the tree that morning, and I thought, oh, I'm going to be a rock and roll star. This is going to be great. Of course, that didn't really pan out. I liked rock and roll on occasion, did more so in the earlier years, but not so much now. But it turns out that my father was so busy being a father and providing for the family, he never really picked up the guitar, and he wound up giving me that acoustic guitar, which I still have to this day. And it holds a great deal of emotional value. And that's actually my songwriting guitar that I keep hanging up over my favorite chair in the house. And when I'm sitting there and inspiration strikes, I can just reach up and pick it up and pull it down and start writing. It's, you know, it's an old cheap Yamaha, but I've had some work done on it by several dear friends over the years. And they've improved in the action and the sound and put pickups in it. And I used to gig with it quite often. But now I've moved on to this other one that I feel a even deeper extension, emotional connection of myself just because of what it is, and it's a much more quality guitar, but it does not hold the same intrinsic emotional value as that cheap Yamaha. But yeah, so that guitar has influenced me and influenced my music, and it still provides one of the tools for songwriting to this day.
And tell me more about the music you listened to growing up that inspired you and inspires you to this day.
Oh, yes. I know a lot of people say that they're into a lot of different types of music, and I'm one of those people. Early on in life, I remember, again, my father, some of the earliest memories of music affecting me and making me feel things is I can remember riding in my father's pickup truck with him as one of those old Fords with a single bench seat. All it had was an AM radio, so we had the option of like three stations at the time, I think, and he always kept it on country stations. So the earliest influences I had, I think, were what we would consider today to be classic country music, which I still, when I'm playing a show or gigging, I love to slide into some of those covers and do some of the classic stuff that takes me back to childhood. I also have a brother who is 12 years older than I am, so I had a little bit more of that influence as a child. He was, you know, into Stevie Nicks and Petty and Loverboy and all that cool stuff back in the day, and he used to have this old Mustang. It was a little fancier than Dad's pickup truck when it came to audio quality because it had an 8-track player in it.
Oh.
And I can remember I used to sneak out there and sit in his car. It was one of those where you could turn the stereo on without requiring the ignition to be on. And I would go in there and pop in some George Jones 8-tracks. And I remember Loverboy and Hank Williams Jr. And by that time, he had evolved into a lot of different stuff. So, you know, I had a lot of those influences early on. And then as I became a little more serious about playing music, and when I formed my first high school band, we wanted to be rockers. So we were into rock and roll music. I was heavily influenced by early AC/DC and Metallica and Ozzy Osbourne and things like that back in the day. I remember we were playing a talent show at high school one time, and it was in a small community, pretty rural, and country music was the heavy influence of a lot of folks back then. And we broke into our rendition of Crazy Train, and we felt like we were shredding this thing. We were in the moment, living there and on the stage doing this thing, and when we finished, it was kind of like one of those scenes where it was completely silent in there, and everybody was staring at you like, what did you just do?
And where was this?
I went to high school at Gordon Lee's down in Chickamauga, so not too far from here. But it was, you know, I haven't been, even though it's close in proximity, I don't get down that way quite often. But, you know, at the time it was very conservative, and that whole metal sort of stuff was not in vogue at the time.
When and how did Chattanooga become home?
Oh, Chattanooga became home close to 20 years ago. So I grew up, moved off to college, had college bands. Then after college, I moved to Michigan for a while. You know, I was one of those, I graduated college, I was like, I have this newfound degree, I want to go save the world, and I want to go, you know, make an impact and do things like that. And I also want to do something that scares me to death. So I'm going to move to a place to where I don't really know anybody and I've never been there before. So I just loaded everything I had, what little bit I owned at the time, and moved to Michigan and started working at a YMCA camp up there and had a ball doing that and continued to play music. We actually had a little on-camp band that I created with some musical friends up there, and we would do shows for all the kids that would come in there to camp, and we would have those different talent shows and play around the campfire and all those sort of things, and further started developing and honing the skills, and obviously got some different influence from there, because the wonderful thing about the place I was working at the time at that particular camp, I'm sure many are that way, but that's the one I have the experience with. Like, we had not only staff, but campers would come in from all over the place. We had staff from all over the world. Campers would come in from all over the region, some of them even across the country, come visit this place. So obviously the more exposure you have to different folks and different backgrounds and different experiences and culture, the more it enriches you and the more that it can influence you.
And then from Michigan.
From Michigan, yes. That's when I decided, so in Michigan, I left out a whole lot of details there, I realize. So I'm in Michigan, and I met a girl, and I fell in love, and we wound up getting married. And shortly after we got married, I said, you know, I've been up here for a few years, and I really like Michigan. I enjoy it, especially in the summertime. But these winters, when I have to take a push broom and get the snow off the front of my vehicle just so I can see to pull away, I said, it's kind of wearing on me a little bit. What do you think about Tennessee? And she's like, I'm up for whatever. So we moved back down here. Then, you know, I played music all along. And actually, I'd played a song in our wedding. So when I was in Michigan, and one of the things I still love, like, I love local regional groups, local music. I'm not a mainstream music kind of guy, even though, you know, obviously I think everybody at some point was influenced by that. But the more I got into it, the more I got to know, the more I realized the value to me in these folks that are here in the region. They're not necessarily pushed by a big label or anything like that. They're out there grinding day by day and, you know, putting in the work and making it on their own and all that stuff. And I thought, you know, that's super impressive. And I want to support people like that. And so that's, you know, I kind of got into it, and we followed a few local bands up there in Michigan, and there was one out of Grand Rapids called Domestic Problems that, as funny as the band name is not commensurate with the song I wound up playing at our wedding, but they had this song called My Only Love, and it was just the sweetest love song, and so I learned that for our wedding, and I surprised my wife. We got married at an outdoor venue, and I had my guitar hidden behind the tree, and at one point, my best man, I kind of gave him the high sign, the cue, and he snuck over behind the tree and grabbed the guitar and brought it out, and I played that. So that was kind of like our song at the time, and she was floored. Fortunately, that was, I actually didn't goof it up, and I was super happy about that. So that's, you know, that's a fond memory of that. I realize we're all over the map here, but I'm reminiscing on these old times.
Well, we got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, we do. So anyway, yeah, so we moved to Chattanooga. After moving back here, of course, it's been nearly two decades since I've been back. You know, I call this area home. It's been almost two decades since I've been home. Life, family, just influence, yeah, experiences and all that stuff led me more towards really wanting to be a songwriter. You know, I have played and performed for a majority of my life, seriously, ever since high school. But after I've gotten more into it and I've played different venues, bars, doing the cover thing and all that, which I still very much enjoy. But now the songwriting component of it is the thing that takes me to my happy place. Like, when I can create something and it's mine and it makes sense. And if it ever gets to the point where I play it for somebody else, it's already passed my test of, well, is this something that I'm willing to put out there and do that? And so I've had just such a big time and had a tremendous amount of support from folks that I know and don't know in that regard. And it's been one of those fulfilling components of my life, and one in which that I think, at least at this life stage, is one of the major factors in defining who I am.
Well, I think we're ready to hear a song.
Great. I'm ready to play one. You know, in this life stage, the experiences I've had have been just invaluable, the relationships that have been built, and just looking at the overall value of experiences and relationships. I've been thinking a whole lot lately, and this song was precipitated by a leadership training that I'd gone to, led by a wonderful individual here in town. Her name's Sabrina Moon, and she runs the Problem Solving Institute. And she does a lot of training and classes and courses based on the research of Brené Brown. So the song that I'm about to play is called Vulnerability, but we had gone through this session, and it was one of those learning how to identify and express your emotions, and most importantly, about getting in the arena, so to speak, to find the true value in existing in life and connections with relationships. And in order to do that, you have to
be vulnerable, basically. So it was a very emotional experience. We'd covered some ground in there and had some very, very deep and well-connected conversations, and we'd shared things that I'm sure some in the group maybe had never shared with others. And it was one of those things when it was a two-day training, and when I'd finished with it, I'd gone back home that night, and I was sitting there thinking about it and processing it, and I picked up the guitar, and this song kind of fell out.
There was a time I couldn't quite believe in what I had to say. I wrapped myself in the armor of my reason. Such foolish game I played out in the world to guard my heart from the ghosts that hide out in the cave. Paralyzed by the fear that was created. Vulnerability. Skipping stones and the words that you are slinging, ripples all the same. Trying to drown pain that was inflicted. Such foolish game I played down in my heart. Out of sight from the ghosts that hide out in the cave. Losing ground in the race that we were running with vulnerability. I spent life building up the walls that no man can climb. Looking back, I reassess the cost and find that I'm inside. I've been stuck inside. The sun is rising on an old familiar feeling. Now I can't hide my shame. Trying to breathe through the thoughts that kept me reeling. It's such a foolish game I played down in my heart and out of sight with the ghosts that hide out in the cave. Searching for something, maybe even peace with vulnerability. We're all searching for something, maybe even peace with vulnerability.
So vulnerability, you know, that's one of those things I've been thinking a lot about, and I've not been entirely as good as I want to be all of my life, but I've realized that the power of relationships and the power of interpersonal connection is really, for me, like the driving force behind existence. I want to be the best husband, father, and friend, brother, whatever that role looks like on a daily basis that I can possibly be, and through life experiences and being hurt and feeling certain emotions that are not entirely comfortable, it causes us sometimes unknowingly and sometimes very deliberately and consciously to build this armor and this shield around us to protect us. And, you know, I started thinking about that, and I was like, after going through this training and emphasizing the value of, if you want to live this full and rich life, you've got to get in the arena of life. You've got to show up. You've got to put yourself out there. And if you walk around guarded all the time and you don't make those truly deep connections, are you really living the best life that you can? I started thinking about that, and that's where a lot of those lyrics came from.
But being in the arena changes across stages of life.
Oh, it does.
So how would you say that your process as a singer-songwriter has evolved? Certainly the themes have. You probably would not have thought about or written about vulnerability 5-10 years ago, maybe.
That's true. Or you're right. Looking back on it, I didn't really tackle it per se, or tackle it if I even made a conscious effort at some point in time.
I didn't do it properly. Just this process of sitting here having this conversation with you, and I'm sure at some point in your career and doing what you do, you've experienced some of the elements of vulnerability, uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what we're both doing sitting here today, hoping that we're providing some value to your listeners and that people aren't going to say, well, I'm going to change the station because that's a bunch of garbage. You know, it's what you do every day when you show up to do whatever it is you do.
Don't give them any ideas.
Oh, they wouldn't dream of it now that we're talking about this. We've got them hooked. They're engaged. They will, oh, tell me more. Tell me more. Help me be vulnerable. You know, and there's all these myths that surround vulnerability, like vulnerability is weakness. Well, when you think about it, and the more I read Brené Brown's work, you know, I know this sounds like I'm plugging Brené Brown. It isn't. I'm not doing that consciously, but it's just I find a great deal of value in her writing, and it causes me to reflect and think about myself and my life. Get there, engaged, and put yourself out there. I don't know where, what region or what part of the world you were raised in, but where I was raised in that particular time, vulnerability was viewed as weakness. You don't talk about your feelings and your emotions and all that stuff. And the more I learn about it and the more I truly consider it, I realize the courage that is involved to actually put yourself out there.
More to come with singer-songwriter Toby Hewitt, so stay tuned. You're listening to Scenic Roots. More after our news with Bill McLean. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. And now, the rest of our conversation with Toby Hewitt. The singer-songwriter performs Thursday nights at the Backstage Bar on Station Street here in Chattanooga. Before the break, Toby talked about vulnerability. Let's pick up from there.
Anytime somebody steps on stage, especially if they have written the songs that they're performing, they are opening their heart up and they're laying their heart out on each and every table or on each and every stool or on the floor of any venue that they play in.
And even if they've done it countless times, each time is still like the first time.
Absolutely. And yes, each time is the first time. And that's one of the coolest things about playing music and especially about writing songs. I may have performed a song in one venue and it gone over great. And then you do it in a different environment with a different set of circumstances, maybe even the same crowd with different feelings or emotions that particular moment, and it doesn't go over the same. That's what makes it interesting. It's always a gamble and it's always a risk, and I have made a conscious effort throughout my life to do things that scare the heck out of me, and I want to do that to challenge myself and to grow. And so to be able to step on stage and do that every time, every night that you show up, or every day depending on the gig that you're playing, it's like, all right, here's this roller coaster. Let's strap in and ride this thing, you know?
There's something unique about how Americana provides that opportunity to convey vulnerability.
Yes. Yes. Americana is one of my favorite genres of music. It is the one that I would say, and I just realized that I didn't get fully around to answering your question earlier, but my current influence at this particular moment in time, I would say, is if we'd had this conversation 6 months ago, it would have been solely Americana all the way. Now I've blended in this Americana, this red dirt. I've really gotten into this Texas stuff, these folks coming out of Texas and Arizona and New Mexico. Like, I'm a huge Ryan Bingham fan. I went to see him when he came to town a little while ago. Robert Earl Keen, Hayes Carl, folks like that. Like, that's really what James McMurtry. For whatever reason, like, my musical variety shifts so often, and sometimes it's day by day and sometimes it's moment by moment. But over the last consistent stretch of weeks, it's been this red dirt stuff.
It gets back to vulnerability. Vulnerability as a listener. I'm going to take a chance.
Yes. And try something new.
And check this out.
I think we've all experienced this before, and I'm going to be vulnerable and go ahead and admit that I'm ashamed to admit it. But I have, like, snubbed my nose at certain music that somebody's like, hey, man, you got to listen to this. I'm like, I don't want to listen to that junk. And then a short period of time later, you finally press pause long enough to actually, okay, I'm going to stop what I'm doing, or I'm going to listen to it driving down the road and get lost in my thoughts. And you hear it and you're like, how did I not find this sooner? You know, and then you're kicking yourself about, oh, my goodness, you know, especially if things like, I've been one that have been guilty. Like, if it's kind of trendy, I kind of shun it, you know. And I'm like, I don't want trend. I want really authentic stuff. Then I find out after the swell has subsided a little bit and it's no longer like the end thing, then I come back around to it and I'm like, oh, man, this is awesome. You know, I should have gotten on that bandwagon a long time ago. But
It's like the old saying by Yogi Berra, talking about, in this case, a place in New York City that's crowded. That place is so crowded, nobody goes there anymore.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what music is. It's crowded. You know, and I can't, and I'm not saying this only because I'm sitting in this studio, but if I'm not listening to music that I have purchased, or I do streaming a lot, and there's the whole debate on that, whether, you know, how it really affects the artist and this and that. Well, I think most people that are really into music, they're going to stream, especially with the technology we have today. But anyway, that's another point. If I have an FM station on, it's an NPR station, not only for shows like this, but the quality of the program, the news and all that stuff. I like to keep up with what's going on, but I don't let news impact and dictate my life and my emotions for any particular day. I reserve that for music. But yeah, so mainstream radio stations, it's just, I'm not knocking plenty of folks like that. And obviously it's still very big business, because there are a lot of stations and labels and things like that that are making a whole lot of money. So it's obviously popular. That's just not my particular thing that I like to get into.
One thing that is your thing is playing a backstage.
Yes.
How'd that happen?
You know, that was one of those literally stumbled upon it sort of things. So it was several years ago. It was soon after the Comedy Catch had moved locations from the Brainerd location up by the tunnels down here to Station Street. And it was in, you know, early on in the early stages of the renaissance of Station Street. And some friends of ours had tickets for a comedy show, and they invited us to go, and we were like, yeah, you know, I haven't done that in a while. We'll go down there and check out the new location of the Comedy Catch, and, you know, it's been a Chattanooga staple for so long. Like, heck yeah, let's go do it. So we go down there, and I happen to see, I am a bourbon and whiskey fan. I don't drink a whole lot, but when I do drink, I prefer to partake in bourbons and whiskeys and experiment with different, to try new things in that regard. So I saw there's kind of like a, not a stained glass, but a frosted glass window in between the big room of the Comedy Catch and the backstage bar that's right next door. And at the moment in time, I didn't realize, I was like, I didn't know that they were owned by the same people. So I saw those bottles, the silhouettes of the bottles through this frosted glass, and I opened that little door and peeked in, and I'm like, oh my goodness, here's a cool little whiskey bar. And then, of course, I started talking to Kurt Ruhoff, who was the bartender at the time. He's since moved off to bigger and other things in his life. But anyway, Kurt and I struck up a conversation. He's like, you know, hey, after the show, you got to stop over here. And I was like, let's do it. So we did that. And then one thing led to another. We wound up out on the patio. There was a guitar sitting there and a microphone and a sign that said, you know, hey, pick up and play if you want to. And our friends that were with us, they were like, hey, you should play a couple of songs. Yeah. So I started doing it. And a couple of songs turned into like 2 hours worth, and we were having such a big time, and the place was pretty crowded at that. You know, it was one of those nice summer evenings, and lots of folks out there hanging around. We were just having a big time. Everybody was singing along, and I didn't know him at the time, but it was Michael Alfano, the owner there. He walked up while I was playing and threw some money in the tip jar, and he said, hey, won't you talk to me before you leave? And, you know, I was like mid-song, and I was like, yeah, I'll holler at you. So then I took a little break and caught up with him, and he introduced himself and said, you know, we've recently opened here, and this is exactly what I envisioned this to be, you know, what you were doing tonight, playing these songs, people singing along, just having a big time. He's like, would you be interested in coming back down here? And I said, absolutely. Let's, you know, we'll give it a run and give it a go and test it out and see how things go. And that's now turned into a residency that I have every Thursday night. It's just super. It's such a great, great venue, wonderful people, like Michael and his staff there. They're all excellent, great, people-centric. Obviously, they're in the service industry. And just the whole Station Street area and the effort that so many folks have put into bringing that back to life. Well, I say back to life. I've experienced it back in the days when it wasn't a great place to be, especially after dark. But I don't know if it ever had that type of life to it before then that it currently has now. And just to see the renaissance that has occurred, and especially being there week after week and seeing the changes and the people come and go. And one of my favorite things about playing down there is just all the tourism, you know, the folks visiting from all over the world and especially all over the country.
How long have you been playing there?
I've been there for a solid little over two years now. We've been doing this thing regularly for a little over 2 years.
And each time you go out there, there's that vulnerability.
Absolutely. And a new crowd to be vulnerable for, you know? So it's a new risk, a new experience. It's new emotional exposure every single time. And
even if they're familiar faces, it's never the same constellation twice.
That is true. That is true. And we have, like I say, just so many visitors coming through. And it's almost like it's such a small venue and it's so intimate. Number one, I love that. And number two, because we have so many visitors coming through, it's kind of like touring, but not being on tour. Like I'm being exposed to and exposing my music to different people every week.
The tour is coming to you.
Yes. It's so wonderful.
Well, I think we're ready to hear another song.
Awesome.
So I played a wedding this past summer, and I mentioned earlier that I'm a father. I'm a very proud father. And I happen to be the father of a teenage daughter. And so as I was preparing for this wedding, I'd been tinkering around with this song idea. And I started thinking about the father of the bride. And I started thinking, I was like, I wonder, what is this guy feeling? What is he thinking right now? And I'd never met him before. I didn't really even know the bride. And I didn't know if he had gone through this experience before as far as having other children, being married. And then that led into, holy smokes. My daughter is of the age where before I know it, potentially she's going to be getting married. And then it struck me. I was like, oh, wow, time has flown. And that led into, what advice would I give her? If she were to solicit it, what would I say to her? And I truly started thinking about that, and the song was born. Suppose I always knew that I would see this day. Doesn't make it any easier, though it has to be this way. I guess there's a part of me that's still scared to face my fears, wishing I could tear the pages back a few more years. I pray for you and always know I want for you the best. Don't forget where you came from. Don't forget to rest. There's a great big world for living. It won't always be nice. Take every chance that you are given and be prepared to pay the price. Set your path along the high road and follow no one into the ditch. There'll be scars inside your soul if you scratch the 7-year itch. I pray for you and always know I want for you the best. Don't forget where you came from and don't forget to rest. And now you're standing there for all our world to see. Just how beautiful you've always been to me. Where there's pain and endless tears, baby, keep your powder dry. When those nights feel like years, thank God that you're alive. You'll forever be your daddy's girl, no matter how you've grown. I feel your pace inside my heart, no matter where you roam. I pray for you and always know I want for you the best. Don't forget where you came from. And darling, don't forget to rest. Suppose I always knew that I would see this day. Doesn't make it any easier giving you away.
Goes by fast, doesn't it?
Does it ever? It really does. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but you know, you look back on it, and you start reminiscing on all the memories and experiences, and wow, that's what it's all about. It really is. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And oh, she's so wonderful. It was the longest after I'd written that. You know, they say that a good song is one that makes you feel something that moves you. And I remember before I was getting ready to head out to play that wedding, I was sitting there in the songwriting chair polishing that up and fleshing it out. And my daughter's like, "Hey, what are you working on there?" And I was like, "Well, that's this new song. Let me play it for you." And she's like, "Oh, I'd love to hear it." And she sat there beside me and I played that song. And by the end of it, she was just bawling. And I was like, "That's a keeper." It moved her to such emotion. And I like that one. I'm looking forward to getting in the studio and recording that one.
And speaking of recording, you are working on an EP?
I am working on an EP, and I've been working on this EP for a long time, and not a long time, but several months now. And I was hoping to have had it done by now, but, you know, life happens, things get in the way. I don't want to be a downer, but recently my mother was diagnosed with brain cancer, and we've been trying to stay with her and support her as best we can, and that's shifted my focus and my priorities a little bit away from music here as of late. I'm still maintaining the weekly stuff on Station Street down at the backstage, but I've had to cancel some other shows that I had planned out just because I don't want to be that artist that cancels things at the last minute. So I've been focused on helping support my mother and getting through this time as best we can. And that has also shifted the EP a little bit to the back burner, but we've done a tremendous amount of work on it. We just need to lay down some final vocals. And then I also want to get that song. I think I'm just going to do a stripped down, straight up acoustic version of that and throw it in there as a bonus track on the EP.
Well, I'm sorry to hear what she's dealing with now and what you and the family are dealing with.
Yeah, thank you for that. She's the strongest person I know. She has obviously influenced me so much and taught me so much. And it's definitely a tough thing. It's one of those things that is inevitable in life. And I'm just thankful for the relationship we have, the relationship we've had all these years, the things she's taught me, the influence and the role model that she has been. And equally as important, the fact that both of my children have gotten to know her on a level that they have, such a deep level, and have spent the time with her. And they still are able to do that. She's still cognitive enough and aware. You know, she's not forgotten anyone. And she's been such a blessing. She has touched so many lives. And that's been evidenced by all the calls and texts and visits of support that we've received.
Well, I wish her all the best, you and your wife and the kids.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
In dealing with all that.
It's one of those things. We'll get through it. And there will be a song come out of it. I don't know when, I don't know how, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm confident there will be one. And I hope I can get myself through. That goes back to the I Pray For You song I'd written for my daughter, you know, when I first started performing that. And I remember it was in October. I'd done a benefit concert for the Mountain Arts Community Center up on Signal Mountain, and they were doing a fundraiser, and they asked me to come play a show up there. And for whatever reason, that particular night when I was performing I Pray For You, I got to the end of it and I just about lost it. I was like, oh man, you know, when I've been rehearsing it and playing it and stuff like that, it's about 50-50 whether I'm going to get through that song without the emotion coming through in the form of tears and cracking voice and all that stuff. I remember that night it came out and I was like, here it is. Let's be vulnerable.
How can people follow you online?
Hey, that's an excellent question. Thank you for asking. I'm on all the social media platforms at Toby Hewitt Music. We will be launching a website soon, TobyHewittMusic.com, that will be dropped, and a lot of promo video and contact information will be up on TobyHewittMusic.com in the near future when we release the EP. And I'm looking forward to all the visitors. And if you can't make it down on a Thursday evening, which I hope you would make the time to do so, we can have a lot of fun together, but at least reach out to me on social media as for now, or also do private parties and events at TobyHewittMusic@gmail.com. If you want to email me, reach out to me on social media.
All right.
I love new friends. I'm glad we're new friends now.
I'm glad we are too.
I've had a wonderful time.
Me too. Toby, thanks so much and all the best.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Among the murals in downtown Chattanooga is the Little Airplane Boy. Ali Kay is the artist who painted it as part of the Macaulay Walls Mural Project, a collaboration of artists that created the city's first drive-through art gallery. Ali stopped by Scenic Roots. Ali, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How did you get into murals?
Well, I've always painted my whole life since I was a little kid. And I actually started working with an interior designer when I was 16 years old. She started bringing me in on projects and started having me paint like furniture and walls for her clients. And at 16, I thought that was pretty awesome. So that was kind of like the time when I started realizing that that was maybe a direction I could go and how I could use my art to kind of have a business.
And tell us more about that business.
So my mural painting business is called Positive Space. And I officially started it when I was 19. And so I went to school for fine art, but I just did the mural painting on the side, kind of in between classes, and just kind of had it fit into my schedule. So I still do murals, and my business has evolved a little bit, but it's been fun. I lived in Houston for 3 years, and there it was a really great market for residential murals. So I was working in homes and doing finishes and all kinds of things.
And of course, there are murals all over downtown Chattanooga.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Including one by you.
Yep. Shortly after I moved here, I got involved with the Macaulay Walls mural project. Kevin Bate, who was in charge of that, he brought me in as a group of artists that he was putting together to do that series. So I have my little airplane boy over on Macaulay. That was a fun project.
Tell me what you think about the mural culture here.
I think it's a great thing for our city. I think there's potential for a lot more of it. And I love seeing murals by local artists here. I think that's a really important thing for our city, to see work from people that we know, supporting the artists, putting the funding towards that. I think it's really important. I'm excited for the potential for that.
What themes do you focus on in your work?
My subject matter is varied. I'm drawn towards nature. I love painting trees, flowers, that kind of thing. But I also love people. So I have a couple of different series that I work in when I do actually get to kind of do my own thing and it's not commissions. So I have a series of floral pieces that I use a reactive paint. It's made by a company called Modern Masters. And the paint actually has iron particles in the paint. And then I spray it with an activator and the paint will rust. And so it changes within about maybe 4 or 5 hours. So it's a cool process, and I like sandwich that in with acrylic paints. So that's one series that I have. And then I also have a treescape series, which is really about the light coming through leaves and how it interacts with the texture of the leaves. And then, of course, I do a lot of portraits, and I do those as commissions, but I also really just love painting people.
How long can it take you to do these different murals?
Murals vary. Like the airplane boy, I think I had about 10 actual painting days on that project. But when you're doing an outdoor mural, it changes with weather and you're not consistently painting every day. So I think I worked on that one on and off for about a month. I was also about 6 months pregnant when I painted that mural, which changed things a little bit too. But yeah, usually, you know, within about a week or two, a mural can be done.
And what inspires you in your art?
Color. I think that's kind of the common theme in my work, is I love representing a subject in colors that are playful, but they're still really authentic to the subject. So I don't like go wild, you know, making somebody's skin totally green. But if I'm painting a portrait of someone, I will usually paint the skin purple first, and then I'll layer flesh tones on top of it and letting those little bits of purple pop through. So I just like being kind of adventurous with the way I represent things and still have them look true. It's kind of a game I'm playing with it.
And the game never ends.
No, no. Yeah, I'm always getting new ideas, and it's fun.
What ideas are percolating right now?
There's so much I always want to do. I am actually in the process of starting a new series. It's kind of just like this little side thing that I'm doing where I'm painting portraits of kids in Haiti who are waiting for sponsorship. My cousin started a nonprofit there a few years ago, and so she provides educational sponsorships for kids there. And she has hundreds of children that are waiting. So I asked her to send me photos of these kids, and I'm just going to, in my free time, when I get a few hours in between other projects, I'm working on painting these kids, and the paintings are going to be for sale, which the price of the painting will allow that child to go to school. So I'm pretty excited about that.
So you just started painting these. How long do you think it'll take you to paint all of these to go on sale?
Well, I can never paint all of them because there's always more kids and she has so many photos to send me. But my goal is to probably paint 5 to 10 of the children to be able to get sponsorships. And I'm expecting to work on this for about the next month or so.
You mentioned Facebook. Where else can people go online to follow everything that you do?
They can follow me on Instagram, Allie K Studio on Instagram. And I also recently started a YouTube channel. I'm now offering a lot of online painting classes. And so as a component of that, I'm offering free online painting tutorials and tips on my YouTube channel. So they can find me there too.
All right, Allie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. Our show is produced by Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Follow us on Twitter at scenicroots423 and email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Also, follow WUTC on Facebook and Instagram and listen online anytime at wutc.org and the WUTC app. Join us again next time for Scenic Roots.